Asia Institute in Ethnology. I'm also a medical doctor. And I did like 1.5 years research in South India. It was a village, and it was like a family-based practice of Ayurveda. And this family has a lineage background also of transmission of knowledge of Ayurveda, like from father to son or something. And I just studied the practice of Ayurveda. And this is like the guru, the main person which the tradition is centering on. He's dead like in the last 50 years. He died, he passed away like 50 years back. But he was very, he lived like 90 years, for 90 years. So he had a lot of disciples. And one of his disciples is the grandson-in-law of his, who is running the clinic nowadays. So this will be like just an example of my research, but I will try to give you also some theoretical concepts about Ayurveda. I mean, I won't focus only on Kerala. I would like you, at the end, that you go at home with some concepts. I mean, what is the body concept at the end and all. Anyway, what I plan today is for 1 hour or something, maybe less, let's say 50 minutes, I will present you this presentation. It's really long, but I will stop it at some point because I will have a video which will much better suggest what I want to say. So if I will just run over the time, I will just make a stop. It's no problem. I just put a lot of slides, but we will just cut it. And then I will present you the video because the video is about the therapy. It's a video from Kerala, from a clinic, and they just explain how they do the therapy, so you will understand about the therapeutical concepts. But before of that, I will just go briefly into the body concept, because if you don't understand how body is seen in this system, you won't understand how therapy works in it. So every medical system has its logic inside its own paradigm. So if you understand the paradigm, you understand why this and that is done, what is the logic of the thing. But anyway, for the beginning, I will bring you from like from up to down, like from an overview to the specific. So, you know, India has a situation of medical pluralism. I'm sure you got this word in your lectures in the last time. India is a very good example for that because you have 7 medical systems which are officially recognized by the state. You have our medical system from here, which you know it, it's biomedicine. Then you have homeopathy, which is actually a German medical system, but the difference to the Germany is Germany has no faculty of homeopathy, but India has colleges of homeopathy. So you can really make a good like preparation to being a homeopathic doctor in India. And then you have these 4 Indian medical systems. So this is a new thing, what is under the Indian medical system. So this is the last 30 years that we have this name, Indian medicine, actually after post-colonial situation, post-independent situation. And these are Ayurveda, Yunani, Siddha, Naturopathy, and Yoga. Actually, there are 5. But anyway, the last 2 are drugless, so it's interesting to put them as a medical system, but they really are. And my focus will be Ayurveda. It's maybe the most known between them. I'm not sure if you heard about Yunani. This is the Greek Arabic medicine. I'm sure maybe by the medical system you got something about it. Siddha, it's only in Tamil Nadu. It's some people tell it's like Ayurveda. Some differences are there anyway. And then naturopathy and yoga is just natural therapy where you put earth and water and air and sun on your body. So you use the nature to get treated. And a part of these systems which are standardized, the state is regulating this. You have also some other practices, healing practices, which are not organized in a system. They are not regulated by the state. Sometimes they are not really also recognized. And this is the like astrology, temple healing, then sorcery, you know, bone centers, tribal medicine. You have a lot of healers in India doing a lot of things.
What does this sorcery mean?
It's when by saying some mantras you try to heal or also you try to harm.
Okay.
So you can do both. Yes. Like black magic. Something like that. And you have also Tibetan medicine, which nowadays struggles to get regulated, to get recognized, to get standardized. So nowadays you come also to this title. These are the titles that you get at the end, Bachelor of Tibetan Medicine and Surgery. And you know, by the regulated ones, you always have a degree at the end. So you can write your doctor and you have a MBBS degree for biomedicine, what is MD, you know MD. then you have for homeopathy, Bachelor of Homeopathic Medicine and Surgery. Then, I mean, I don't know about homeopathic surgery, but anyway. Ayurvedic is Bachelor of Ayurvedic Medicine and Surgery, and so on, and so on. Everything is regulated nowadays. Now, the interesting part is that you also have a structural pluralism in India. So some of these systems, medical systems, also have an old type of transmission of knowledge. So you won't have only the BMS doctors or all these regulated doctors which have a diploma. You will also have some traditional doctors who learn from their fathers, from their grandfather, or from some guru. And they are also practicing. They are not really recognized nowadays by the state, but at home, they are allowed to practice. They will get patients at home, and nobody will look what they do. So you have the Vaidya in Ayurveda. Maybe you heard about this, Vaidya. So they are the traditional practitioners of Ayurveda. You have the Hakims in Yunani medicine. And you have the Siddhars or Sitars in practice of Siddha in Tamil Nadu. And I'm not sure about naturopathy yoga, if the yogis are like the traditional practitioners of yoga or something. But anyway, you have these two people. You have here Vaidya. He got his knowledge from a guru, from his father, from his grandfather. And you have here BMS doctors. He's an Ayurvedic doctor. Both are Ayurvedic doctors, practitioners. But he has a diploma. He's using also more modern type of diagnosis and therapy. Like, I mean, you see he's measuring blood pressure. And of course, now even these unregulated systems, there is a tendency in India to get regulated. So I told you about tibetan medicine. They struggle to get like recognized and get a degree at the end. And by astrology, you already have some Bachelor of Vedic Astrology degree or something. So even this is possible nowadays. So you see that easy by easy, everything will go up, will go to the regulated. And what means this? What is the conclusion? The people who are traditionally learned in a lineage, they disappear, they are the last. Because the system of transmission of knowledge by guru and disciple is disappearing because it's not recognized by the state. So such practitioners which you see there, like the Vaidya, they are somehow, I mean, less and less. And the number of BMS doctors and regulated doctors are going up and up. And this situation I would like to present to you now, why this happened, I mean, how this came, what kind of regulations were there in India to bring this all this to the standardized system and not to recognize, let's say, the guru-disciple system. But before I'm doing that, I will give you some notions. So what is Ayurveda? I can define it like this. This is the definition which Langford is giving, Jean Langford. She wrote a book on like a fluid body, fluent body. And it's on Ayurveda. And she's telling that Ayurveda is a complex of old South Asian healing practices, traced back as far as like 600 before Christ, or before current era. Why healing practices? So she doesn't want to say it's a system. Because this is a very recent idea to put everything in a system, to make it standardized, to put like a stamp on it, a label on it, and say, we have a system. Actually, Ayurveda was all the time very heterogeneous and very syncretic also. So there were a lot of practices, very different. And you can call that Ayurveda, that Ayurveda, that Ayurveda, but they won't resemble so much each other. Maybe they will have the same paradigm. I mean, they will have the same idea, the same body concept. But the practice itself will be so various, so flexible also. So actually, you have still a lot. I mean, all these practitioners, they are Vaidyas. And the practice of this Vaidya is resembling the practice of this and of this and of this, but they are not identical. Everybody has his specialized type of knowledge because it's not standard. You don't get it in as I'm doing now. At the end, you will get the same knowledge from this course because I'm only one person who is teaching so many people. There you will have maybe one guru, one master, which will teach only three students or something over the time. And these students will have just that special knowledge of the guru. They won't have a knowledge from books or a knowledge like a general knowledge. They will have just special knowledge of the guru. And then they will be practicing only that special part. They are generally specialized. For instance, he's very good in treating stomach diseases. He is very good in treating children diseases and skin diseases. This is like what he's knowing. And he is very good in treating joint diseases. So you see, everybody's like specializing is not knowing everything and nothing, but knowing very good one field. And so this is the idea why I'm telling healing practices. I don't want to say it's a healing system, because still these people are there. Maybe in 50 years we'll say, I bet it's a healing system, because these people won't be there anymore. And it's basing on a paradigm. So they are healing practices, they are very various, but they have a paradigm, they have a logic inside. And this is like anatomy and physiology in our medical system. The anatomy of Ayurveda is this dhatu, tissues. So tissues in Ayurveda, this dhatu is the concept which you can grasp a little, because there are seven tissues which you somehow understand. But the physiology, let's say the fine part of it, which is putting everything in motion, is the dosha. And this is a more difficult concept, because you cannot really grasp it. You cannot put it under the microscope. The doshas you cannot see, but you can see the effects of the dosha on the dhatu, on the tissues. And then you can say, oh, because this tissue is like dry and all, you have dosha vata, which is high. So you will see the effects of the dosha on the dhatu. You will never see the dosha. So you never see the physiology of Ayurveda. You will see only the anatomy of Ayurveda, which are these tissues. And of course, nowadays you have Ayurveda all over the world. I think you have it in Germany also, of course, a lot of it. You have it in USA, you have it all over. And, but of course, the practice is different, because here some people do some things, in India they do some other things. Now, I will just try to concentrate on India. So I will present you what we have in India, and this is what you still have in India. You won't have in Europe, you won't have in USA. It's these lineage-based people, which live in villages mostly, and practice like a cottage-based, let's say, practice, only around their cottage. And they got their knowledge through parampara. This is a Sanskrit word, means lineage. So from like a guru to from a master, let's say, to a disciple. And of course, sometimes in India, you can get the knowledge in temples, even for Brahmanic knowledge, for being a priest, a Hindu priest. You will get your knowledge from another priest. So it's also this parampara. Parampara is not only for Ayurveda. Parampara was the way of transmitting knowledge, any type of knowledge, in before times. But now, as some types of knowledge are becoming regulated by the state, and the methods are changed, you go now to school, you have books, they disappear. So Ayurveda was controlled by the state, and so this is not, let's say, stimulated anymore. It's not encouraged anymore. But for instance, priestly knowledge, I mean Brahmanic knowledge, still is going like this, like a lineage. And also Tibetan medicine is still transmitted like this. Astrology, you also go to a guru normally and you get the knowledge of astrology. So this is a method of transmission of knowledge which is still existing, but in Ayurveda it's becoming like extinct. I mean it's less and less. My idea is they are these persons, they are learned persons. It's difficult to translate the word. It's a knowledgeable person. From Vid, from Sanskrit, it's knowledge. And also it's a honorific form. I mean, if you call someone Vaidya and you say his name, this means it's like calling me Dr. Mihail, I know, so it's a title. But of course, you will observe, what I observed in India is, if you have low-caste practitioners, and these are low-caste practitioners, they will very gladly use the word Vaidya, because for them it will be an enhancement of their status. If they say, I'm Vaidya, Velayudan, or Velayudan Vaidya, or Raghavan Vaidya, it's not so quite everything inside anyway. But by the high caste person, actually the practice of Vaidya would be not enhancement of status, because also being a Vaidya means coming in contact with so many people. So in the idea of purity in Hinduism is actually to be like, you have that distant pollution, where the people according to the caste have to be distant to you. If you're a Brahmin, the caste under you should be like 2 meters, should not be more near than 2 meters. Or if it is really the lower caste, should be like you can't even see it. Yeah, it's just 50 meters away. So the idea is, being a Vaidya is not really for a high caste and enhancement of status. That's why these people which are high caste, they won't really, or before times, they won't really use the word Vaidya. They will use the caste name. So for instance, Nair. Nair in Kerala is a little bit higher caste. And so he will call himself Gangadhara Vaidya. Gangadhara Nair, sorry, not Vaidya. And this is Narayan Nambudiri, he's a Brahmin. So So only nowadays, because so many people are interested in Vaidyas and they are becoming extinct, they get like an aura, you know, wow, Vaidya. He's so seldom to find. So they realize that people like the idea of being a Vaidya because it's something which is rare. So they will use now both Vaidya and the caste name. It will be a double enhancement of status nowadays because you don't have this idea of pollution, of distant pollution anymore. It's like, you know, now you can even touch Vaidya and give him your hand. So it's no problem anymore. But in before times, it was not such a good thing to be a Vaidya. Do you have any questions? Okay, I will pass. Just very shortly, I will put you in the history. It's just to get how, okay, some Virga and all these things are away. Doesn't matter. What I want to say is how India came, or how the, let's say, the Indo Valley came to the idea of Ayurveda. Because before you had magic medicine, pox god cult, you had magic medicine, which we told about this mantras and all, white magic, black magic, and also these concepts of soul, atman, and fire, they were there, like, even before the current era. But you didn't have Ayurveda, because Ayurveda comes later, and it's actually very good structured. It's like a science, actually. Cut a lot of the black magic things away, and it's really structured as we have now our medical books. You have the diagnosis, you have the etiology, you know, or the disease and the treatment. The logic is inside. The paradigm is very good structured. So actually, you cannot say that Ayurveda is magic medicine or something. Actually, it's scientific enough. Because these people, Charaka was somehow the first. We don't know who was Charaka, maybe what more people, you know. Charaka means just itinerant person who moves from here and there. But anyway, this Samhita, this, how do you call it in English, Zamling, and you can see like an encyclopedia of Ayurveda, you know. This was like written at the turn of the era, so if a little bit before the current era. And at that time, it was the first one which was like scientific, what was put really, you won't get magic medicine so much inside. You will get only in psychiatry, where the demon possession, you will get something about demons. But otherwise, everything is very like logic and scientific. It's the way you understand biomedicine nowadays. So this is for you, just understand that Ayurveda is not so much magic medicine or mantravada. It's another medical system which is also a little bit bodily, to his body concept concentrated, and also very logical in its own paradigm. Now, what happened to Ayurveda? How it came that we have it now regulated, and how it came that the Vaidyas are like reducing their numbers, is even during colonialism in India, we had this idea of independence. People wanted to get independent. And the best way of showing that you own or you rule land is to control his health and education. So you'll see in every national state, health and education are in the hands of the state. And this also shows that the state has power on the land, can control the transmission of knowledge in the state and also the health practice. So because that interested in health and education, it became like over a period of hundred years, this regulation started by making schools, then making joint knowledges between Ayurveda and biomedicine, because the British were there and they had already some biomedical colleges, and now you have also Ayurvedic colleges, which before you didn't have. But anyway, these colleges were in the cities, in the big cities of India. It doesn't mean that in the village, the people who would practice Ayurveda will have to go to the college or something. I mean, they will still practice in the village. But it was an increased interest to go to the city, if you're in the city, to go to the college. So you won't go to a guru, no? You won't go to a master, because he won't give you a diploma at the end. It's not possible. He'll give you his blessing, and after you get his blessing, you can go and practice. But so the legitimation in this master disciple transmission of knowledge, the legitimation was only the blessing of the guru at the end. If the guru is not giving you the blessing, you cannot practice. So in our system, you get a diploma. Only with a diploma you can practice. So people in the cities will started going to colleges. And you have the first colleges in the three parts of India. They were under three presidencies. I don't know how much you know about the history of India. Anyway, India was like parted in three regions, and every region had like a capital, if you want, and it was like controlled by the British from that 3 points. And generally, in these three big cities, you will have all this regulation going on, starting and going on. And you'll have the first Ayurvedic colleges, and you have the first, which is not this joint one, this is really not a joint one. So this is the first Ayurvedic college was like in Kerala, in South India, and this time. Then you will have the first Ayurvedic associations, and everything you want to see, it's like biomedicine. We have associations, we have examinations, we have companies which are producing our medicines, standardized medicines. So you see, by that time, like 100 years before the independence, things already started to get regulated. And after independence, they got even stronger. They got so strong that even the village practice was affected by this. So even if you are a Vaidya in a village, you are not allowed anymore to practice. Before independence, if you were in a village, you could still practice. And in the city, people with diploma. But now, it's only diploma. So by this time, it's like 35 years back, or almost 40 years back, that BMS degree came, like Bachelor of Ayurvedic Medicine and Surgery. And by that point, only people having this degree were allowed to get registered on the lists. So by this point, actually, the Vaidyas, or transmission of knowledge through parampara, through lineage, got unrecognized by the state. So a Vaidya cannot practice anymore. I mean, he can practice at home, but he cannot open like a small clinic and go there and practice because he needs this degree. So what will do some Vaidyas? This is what they say. These are Vaidyas. This is the youngest one, which I know. He's 44. And he learned from his uncle. And this is the Vaidya who learned from the first picture of my presentation from that guru who passed away 50 years back. And what they are telling is the reason is there is a need of license for the Vaidya to treat. Now the government recognition is a must. So there is no use of teaching disciples now. So these people nowadays, they don't have disciples anymore. If you don't have disciples, the transmission of knowledge, traditional knowledge, won't go, will stop. So you won't have traditional practitioners anymore. So we must look for that taste also. After plus two, you know, this it's like after second standard, or 12th standard, I mean. So you have in India this plus two, which is after the 10th standard. They get their degree, then they join some Ayurvedic college, and they learn under some other. So this is very interesting. Some people who get their degree, like their diploma, they still cannot practice because it's just theory, like, you know. So they will go to Vaidya, having a degree in hand. They will come to these people and learn with them. They learn the practice. So at some point, the graduates of Ayurveda nowadays, they will have both the knowledge of the books, let's say, of the college, and depending how long they spend with these people, they will have also a traditional type of knowledge. So somehow, let's say, the traditional type of knowledge is still going on, partly, by these people having diploma. But it's not going on by people who are learning only under traditional practitioners. So you don't have people who are not in colleges. Like, say, you go to an Ayurvedic doctor and say, okay, I want to learn, you are my guru. I want to be an Ayurvedic practitioner. This is not happening much anymore. It's still happening. I'm not saying it's not there. But it's less and less because you don't get a degree at the end. So you cannot practice. But anyway, people having a degree, like if you went to the college, a Ayurvedic college, you can then go to these practitioners. And you will be very good then because you will know also the practical part. You will have patients every day. These people have a lot of patients because people in villages trust such people who spend 30 years under the guru or 15 years under the guru more than a person having a diploma, you know, hanging on his wall. So they won't go to a young BMS practitioner. People in the village will still go to such practitioners. So anyway, what the other Vaidya is telling, a medical certificate is a registration number. So you cannot register it as an Ayurvedic doctor if you don't have a medical certificate. The main reason for the decline of traditional Ayurveda at the moment is there are no followers to learn the traditional treatment from the Vaidya. Okay, so what is the solution? Yeah.
What does this plus two mean?
Plus two means Abitur. So what we should imagine on that time, he was 14. He was 14 when he started under his guru. You know, before times you don't have all this schooling, like 12 years of going to school, having this, the normal Abitur and all. You had maybe 5 classes to go to the village school, and after that, yeah, you finished your school, let's say, and you are free. You are free to go to Vaidya or to go to any master and learn any type of job. You can go to an astrologer, you can go to a person who is making something with their hands. Doesn't matter. I mean, you are very young when you start, with 14. Sometimes you are 12. And then you can be molded very nicely, so in 10 or 20 years, you really learn everything what that master wants to give you, because you'll be there daily. So the type of knowledge which these people got is very much embodied. I mean, they will really, after sometimes, resemble their guru. They will look really like their guru, because it's like embodied, the knowledge of the guru. It's like even represented in their own body. It's a very long time, and it's also a very hard time. It's like a penance sometimes, because they have also to serve their gurus. They are like servants in the house of the guru. They have to do a lot of jobs for the guru, but and the guru instead will give his knowledge to the student, and they don't have to pay. So it is this reciprocity idea. Okay, you are my servant here, you work for me, then I will give you this knowledge. So this is the type of reciprocity. And of course, nowadays, you are 18 or something when you finish school. When you finish plus two, you have your Abitur. And normally your parents want to send you after that to college. So you miss all these 6 years which you could have been under a guru. And nobody is interested to send you to a guru, because the guru won't give you a certification. He gives you only his blessing at the end. And this is not much for many people. And I mean, it's not much for a job. If you want to get a job, it's not much the blessing. So this is, the followers are disappearing. The people are not coming anymore. Only when they are like 24, after they finished their degree in Ayurveda, they have this BMS, and they are 24 of age. I mean, they cannot be molded anymore as a child, you know, 12, 14. And they will won't spend, they also won't spend 12 years, 15 years, 30 years, because they don't have time. So they will be there 3 months, sometimes, even 2 weeks. Sometimes 1 year, 1 year is much, because the parents have to pay that person that 1 year lives there by the guru. So everything changed somehow, and this is not possible anymore. This parampara is not possible anymore nowadays in the structure of. So what happening? I mean, if this is not possible, how can this person practice? Sorry, how can this person practice? I mean, he's a Vaidya nowadays, and he's not recognized. He cannot open a clinic. So what many Vaidyas of high caste are doing, because if you are high caste, you have also some social, I mean, you have some social power, you have some networking and a lot of connections. So even if you are a Vaidya from a village, you can somehow bring your children to go to colleges. So even a Vaidya nowadays will send his child to the college. He won't say, oh, stay with me and learn with me. And after getting their degree, the children will come back and learn with their father, the traditional type. And after that, with their degree, they can open up a pharmaceutical company, and they can open a clinic. And this situation, okay, it's not not everybody has the success of doing that. This is the case where I was in this clinic. But anyway, in this village where I was, I met at least, there were at least 3 cases which developed this way. So by high caste Vaidya, still they have a chance. By low caste Vaidya, who have not so much networking, their children won't generally pass the entrance examination for Ayurvedic school. You know, you have to pass an entrance examination. He could use his connection so that they pass it. But because if you come from the village, you know, you're not so much like schooler. Like in the city, you know, in the city you have the best schools, like in the village, maybe not so much. So you won't pass that entrance examination so easily. So this is a situation, you will find it somewhere, sometimes in India, in the villages, but only by high caste. So this is like the solution, what the Vaidya have nowadays, to practice on a larger scale. Otherwise, they will be just at home, and they will do some other job. They will go in politics, they will be cooks. They are very good cooks. I mean, the locals Vaidya, they are the one who can cook the medicines. So a person who cooks the medicines is also a very good cook of cooking food. So they will be like at any type of, let's say, marriages, by weddings and all, they will be hired, and they will be the cook by the marriage. You will taste him very nicely. because they have experience of cooking medicine. So they will do various jobs. And sometimes, now and then, a person will come to his house and he will give him medicines. But it's not an organized practice like a hospital or having a pharmaceutical company. So this is... Okay, this is the half of my presentation. It's over. If you have any questions by now, because I will come in the body concept now.
I just wanted to know one thing. I just wanted to know your point of view, because you have been in India for quite some time. You've done extensive research on that.
Yes.
This student mentor tradition was given a sort of backseat, and a new trend came to the fore, like acquiring of knowledge. It seemed the government wanted to make it quite transparent, and it should not remain confined to only student and mentor.
Yes.
So, but I also find a bit of contradiction, because obtaining degrees, medical degrees like DAMS, DHMS, is okay from the academic point of view, but the practical aspect of that is sorely missing.
Yeah.
So what is your assessment? Why don't they also include the practical aspect of that and somehow make a combination?
Mm-hmm. I mean, of course they have the practical aspect, because they will go in hospitals, the students, but there are not so many Ayurvedic hospitals. What will you have is generally, if you have a university or a college in a big city, then you have the possibility to have some Ayurvedic ward, a good one, let's say, a bigger one, in a biomedical hospital. So you'll have very often in India the situation, we have a just normal biomedical hospital, this is ours here in Europe, just normal biomedical hospital, and a ward of it, it is Ayurveda. And then what you see on that ward is just the patients who go to such type of hospitals. So it will be like... I mean, you will still learn. I'm not saying you don't learn anything practical. Of course you will. I mean, you will learn to do massage and oils, about some oils. The problem is all these colleges, they don't have much money, and they don't invest in medicine. So even he was telling me, as he was in college, he was in Madras in college, and he was telling me that they had two kashaya. Kashaya means decoction. I mean, you have thousands of decoctions in Ayurveda. This means you cook herbs together in some different mixtures, and that liquid which is cooked, I mean, you filter it and then you drink it. So there are so many yogas, so many mixtures of this, but they had two in the college. They had just two. So one was with A, started with A, Alagvada, I don't know, and some was with C. And the doctor was just in the ambulance when the patient would come, it just felt an A, and it won't write a word, you know, A is that decoction, and or sometimes it rewrite a C. So he can sometimes put that kashaya or that kashaya. So you don't have the medicines there. You don't have so much, how can I say, the knowledge of the people also who are teaching. They are not vaidyas. I mean, they also somehow got their knowledge to some degree. Otherwise, they won't be employed in a faculty or in a college. And so the practice itself is very much reduced, and you just pick up some things which you can teach the students, but you don't have the whole thing. I mean, imagine this pharmaceutical company is producing like 800 type of medicines, and they are only for children. So this is only children clinic, you know, children hospital. But if you have 800 only for children, you can imagine for all Ayurveda you have thousands. And if in your college only two are there from a type of medicine, because it's not, there are pills there, there are not only decoctions. So you cannot learn all this practical part. You get very less from Ayurveda. You get just so much. And you also don't understand the logic of it, because there are only two. So it's
Do you really think that the knowledge of these Vaidyas, who I'm sure are good banks of knowledge, the knowledge is not really being used to strengthen the medical system?
It's not learning. Because they are from villages. Nobody's interested in them. If they are not having a diploma, nobody will hire them. I mean, he was hired once. This is the interesting part, because he was so well known, and child specialist in Ayurveda is such a rare thing. I mean, generally they are generalists, Ayurvedic generalists. But he was very knowledgeable because of his guru. He was very knowledgeable. And he was so famous at some moment, because he was also in politics. So he got famous somehow, that a college, an Ayurvedic college in Kerala, hired him and sent him like 12 students to his place, to this place here, to learn, to make their, let's say, their elective in pediatrics, in Ayurvedic pediatrics. But this is rare, that he's used, this is such a rare thing. Normally they are not.
if they go into politics like he did, isn't there the possibility of taking influence on the system and saying, listen, you can't promote all the knowledge this way, it's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they can't take influence that way, then all the knowledge will be lost, and that would be very unfortunate.
You know, a lot of the politics of India, it's already decided in Delhi. Even if they wanted actually to decentralize India, and you have all these states like Kerala and Tamil Nadu and all these states, and they have their own governments, they don't have, they don't have so much influence on Delhi. Delhi will make the biggest decisions. And in Delhi, it's a big city. It's a very big city. And North India, because such a... It was, how can I say, the history was so turbulent in the north part of the country that a lot of Ayurveda and of the practices somehow came to the south. So then nowadays people say, almost everybody told me, that Ayurveda in this way, traditional type, like, it's practiced mostly in South India, in Kerala, for instance. Kerala is like well known for Ayurveda. So the practice which we'll have in the north, where also Delhi is, it's more like with minerals, with some type of rocks, because you don't have the plants. But Ayurveda is actually plants. It's 90% of the medicines are plants. But if you don't have the plants, the practice which you have in the north, it's not a plant-based medicine. So it's not an Ayurvedic, really Ayurvedic type of medicine. I mean, it's more this Rasa Shastra, which is with mercury and some other type of metals. So even the knowledge of Ayurveda in the north and in Delhi, it's not the one from south. But if the south has no influence on north, they don't have any political influence, actually. Even if they are in politics, they may be locally, and Kerala, everybody knows about Ayurveda. You have still patients, you have a lot of clinics. It's a lot of private clinics of Ayurveda. You won't get anywhere in the north so many clinics as here, because the privatization in Ayurveda was encouraged in Kerala, but was not encouraged in the north. In the north, everything what you have in Ayurveda is generally from the state. It's some, I told you, some ward, some Ayurvedic ward in a hospital. But here you have an Ayurvedic clinic almost every 2 kilometers or something, you know. So here you have the place where you can transmit it, but politically the south is not really influencing the north.
I always personally feel that you should not discard the traditional system of medicine unless you have a strong reason to have something really better than that. So this is one reason which precisely explains why Ayurveda in India is. I don't think it's really growing the way it should have grown. I would say it's on the downslide because they discarded the traditional system of learning, and now they are, of course, they have a lot of colleges, but the practical aspect of learning is missing somehow, and people are not really well equipped in terms of acquiring knowledge.
The idea is, if you want to make a national state and be independent, as a state you have to show your power. So you cannot show your power unless you don't regulate the transmission of knowledge in the country. So you won't let the media doing the work, because you are the state, you know, you are the government. You have to show, Indian government decides what knowledge is good and what knowledge is not good and how this has to be transmitted. So by grasping over criteria of schooling, qualification and registration, you just show governmentality. You cannot, if you are a national state, you just cannot let just some people uncontrolled, learn something and do something without, like, putting your hand in it. And, of course, nobody's saying there are some quacks also in India, of course. The government didn't say that at the beginning, we want to show we are the government, so we need to control. They will say, not because we are the government we need to control, it's just because the people are a danger with so many transmission of knowledge which are so specialized, and you don't know exactly who knows what and what he's doing. So the first idea was what they told officially is that we have to get away from the quacks, you know.
Okay. But wouldn't it then be sensible to say, okay, the people have to go to college and they have to get this degree, but after that they have to go to a guru and they have to do that, but not for
that would be interesting for a long time. That would be a nice, middle type of situation that you can, it's true. Many students are doing that because they know they won't get any patients. Patients won't go to a young BMS doctor having just a diploma because people will know. People still know, at least in villages, because in villages you know almost everybody, who is a good practitioner, who is not. Actually, the patients themselves can decide at some point. Maybe in the cities it's more difficult and you can really get some quacks. But in the village, right away people will know, are you a quark or you're not a quark, you know, because they have this experience, they will try you, you know, and yeah, anyway, that will be a good solution. Many students do this by themselves and on their own costs. I mean, this degree is four and a half, exactly. And you can do a post-graduation 3 years after, post-graduate course, like 3 years after. So it takes a lot of time, you know. After that, people want to get some money. I mean, they don't have so much time to invest. This is the idea. Even if you want to stay with a guru nowadays, the guru sometimes, I mean, like in older days, he cannot really take you in his house and provide you food for 1 year, for 2 years, because you won't serve him. I mean, really, who will be now a servant for the guru if you have you're a graduate, you have your diploma, you won't serve your guru, isn't it? So that reciprocity is not there. The guru cannot provide you for living with him. So if you want to stay 1 year with a guru, it's on your own costs, and it's very expensive because already your parents invested in you so many years to be in a city, in a college. There are so many private colleges also. And it's not like feasible for many young people.
What is the position of surgery in Ayurvedic medicine?
It is there. I mean, this one, for instance, I can. Oh, okay. He's knowing that because he learned from his guru. But he's, it's very big. Nowadays, if you have, you know, Ayurveda, and it's called a system. And of healing practices, it's very difficult to say what is part of Ayurveda, what is part of sorcery. All these labels for the practices came later. I mean, later people thought, okay, how can we call these practices and separate them from these practices? Maybe in before times, all was together. I mean, sorcery was also there. And it always depended on the patient. For instance, if he's called to the house of a patient and the child has nightmares, I mean, this means the child is crying at nights. You know, it's crying at nights. This means the people will tell, I mean, the village, that a demon is there, like, making him pain, the child. So he will make a type of mantravada, that's a type of sorcery, where he will tell some words and he will blow over the child, like this, you know? I mean, he can do that. I mean, and he's an Ayurvedic doctor, so is this Ayurveda? I don't know. His guru knew so many things, and he didn't put a label on it. I mean, he knew so many things. He knew Ayurvedic things, which you will call nowadays Ayurvedic. He knew mantravada. He knew also some other things, like black magic also. Like,
so it's quite different surgery compared to the Bible. They don't open the body like that. For example, if they have
even
decided what they will do.
No, I don't think so.
They will refer to the biomedical doctors, or how they handle the patient?
I mean, generally nowadays you have in Ayurveda, it's more a body type of Ayurveda, where you use massage, a lot of body-based treatment, and also internal medicines. But it's true that in before times, I mean, if this person knows and he's telling his idea, you know.
So my question is, did it state that bachelor in Ayurvedic medicine and surgery? So just I want to know, what is the surgery aspect?
the surgery aspect. Okay.
Developed operation theater like bio?
Yeah, I was on the surgery ward, Ayurvedic surgery ward, and I asked that question also to the people. They will, let's say, to 90% practice biomedical surgery, let's say 95%. And there is about 5% where they take some ideas from Sushruta. This is the Sushruta Samhita is the encyclopedia of surgery. Sushruta was the person who was writing it. And it is an Ayurvedic compendium, you know, on surgery, where you have all the instruments on photos and all. I mean, Ayurveda had a lot of surgery. The first known surgery in the history of the world is an Ayurvedic one. It's a person who was losing his nose in a battle, and the nose was put back. So this is an Indian medicine treatment, and is the first which is known, which is written in the world. So Ayurveda had a lot of surgery, but after, not only before British, when, I mean, the history is very long. It happened a lot, ups and downs in Ayurveda, so this got somehow lost. But there's still something there, for instance, in rectal therapy, at the end of the intestine, yeah, there are some methods of doing therapy for that part if it is ill, which are Ayurvedic ones, and these are still practiced. Or in the before time you will do anesthesia of the person with some fumigation. You will put some, I mean, some herbs, there will come the fire, now will come the smoke, and that person then will be anesthetic, or, I mean, he won't feel pain, let's say, so much. It won't sleep, like in our anesthesia, but he won't feel pain. Of course, they don't practice that now. They have an anesthetist who is doing the anesthesia for the operation. But some concepts they try to keep, but it's not much. Surgery is actually really 95%.
And I think they are mostly doing minor surgeries, but if you think of cardiac surgery, bypass surgery, you know, I don't think.
It seems it was there. It was there, heart surgery was
there. Yeah, it was there
a long time back. Nobody knows where it disappeared. So,
now you have an art block in the artery, you have to go.
Yeah, so even the wife of the Vaidya, she got, she's a heart person, let's say a heart patient, and she went to the clinic, the modern clinic, and got treated. And he also goes to the modern clinic to get treated. Even the Vaidyas are getting biomedical treatment. So don't think that Vaidyas are like, no, they like biomedical treatment. They find it quite nice. So anyway, a lot of things from Ayurveda which were before are not there. It's true.
There are things like sorcery and black magic. Could one say that Ayurveda has a certain psychological aspect as well?
Of course, and they are still, I mean, even in, I told you it's like science, by the turn of the era, the books which came out, they are very good, like, structured. But still, on the part which is psychiatrist, like, you know, Unmada is that, I mean, like madness. I mean, still there are some diagnoses like this madness or epilepsy, like, you know, all these neurological types or psychiatric types, they are described there, and it's really as etiology, as the cause of the disease, it's some demon. So you will get a lot of demons there, like 7, 8, 10 names of the demons, and what every demon, according to its name, will provoke on the body. So this demon will give you some jerk, you know, the other demon will give you epilepsy, on the other demon you will just faint, you know. So according to the demons, also the therapy will be like that. So you, in order to put the demon away, you have to burn some herbs in that room or to blow something over the child if it is like crying in the night. You know, you have these methods and it is there. But this is also an interesting question because psychology nowadays is very much of a psychiatry from the modern medicine in India. I mean, it's not so much from Ayurveda. They try to revive a little bit of the psychiatric part in Ayurveda. And they have a post-graduation course, for instance, in Kerala itself, in a college. You can do a post-graduation in Ayurvedic psychiatry, which is a very rare thing to do. I think I know only that place in Kerala which is doing that, because they try like to put some methods of Ayurveda in that. But I'm not sure if they do sorcery or something. I think they won't mention demons or something. Nowadays, you mention this, everybody will think, oh, you're not scientific, you are just... with your head in clouds. So they will avoid, I think, that text, Ayurvedic text where they write that demon and that demon is doing something. Mm-hmm. But they are there. They are, of course, there. Okay. We still have some questions on this part, otherwise we'll go to the body concept. Okay? So I will go in both jobs, it's like 10-15 minutes, and after that I think we'll have some like discussion and then I'll show you the video. So, okay, this back. Okay, so this is the last one from how looks the practice of Ayurveda nowadays if you have a BMS doctor. He's having a stethoscope, he's having his mobile, he has his BP measuring thing. Here the person is giving money. In before time, it's no need generally to give money. Money was not a mean of exchange between people, it was mostly rice, the mean of exchange. Which being you like, I mean, you're a rich man if you have a lot of rice. So nowadays you're a rich man if you have a lot of money. But now everything changed, you see. And here you see an endoscope for pictures or So you can here you will see that here. Here are all his gurus, but they are on the side. Like when his father, which is a Vaidya, is having his practice on today, he will put this guru here on the table, but when he's having his practice, he put the guru away here again. So this is how it changed somehow. I mean, the practice between a BMS doctor, which is the regular degree, and an idea. And you have case sheets, and everything is like in biomedical medicine nowadays, if you have a hospital, in a medical hospital. Okay. It's not looking so nice. Anyway, I don't want to bring you so much in philosophy. In order to bring you to the body concept, I just wanted to give you some concepts of the philosophy behind it and how it came to the idea of soul and of life. Because Ayurveda, this I didn't tell you, Ayur comes from Ayus, means life. And Veda means knowledge. And Ayus actually means life, but also long life, means a good life. So Ayurveda means the knowledge of a long life or of a good life. And these terms came only some time in the history of the philosophy of India, let's say. At some moment in time, these terms came. And Sankhya doctrine is the most important who influenced the paradigm of Ayurveda and the body concept. And in this philosophy, the Sankhya one, life is an embodied soul. This means you have the soul who goes in the matter, inside, you know, will be grosser and grosser. And this is life. So where you have a soul which is in the matter inside, that is life. So you have a plant and has a soul in the plant, that is life. If you have a body and in that body has a soul, it's life. So that is the idea of life. And from that concept of Ayus, it came the concept of these doshas, which I told you they are a little bit difficult to understand. It's like the physiology in Ayurveda. And I will show you how it came to that. So if the soul is coming in the matter will be like an onion, you know, onion having layers. So you have the soul, which is the finest part, which you cannot even grasp, like you cannot even measure it, that is there. But anyway, the effect on the soul of the matter will tell you that the soul is there. So if my body is moving, the soul is inside. If I'm dead, the soul is outside. So this is the effect of the soul, let's say, of the life. So anyway, by getting condensed the matter, you know, like the layers of the onion, you come at the end through condensation to this Vatapitakapha. This is all you have to understand from this. So, and even this Vatapitakapha, they are these three dosha, these like substances, the base of life, if you want. They are so fine that you cannot measure them. So the soul is the finest, and you will get condensed and grosser and grosser and you'll come to Vatapitakapha. And there it like finishes. And the tissues, I mean, I told you have the dhatus, the anatomy in Ayurveda. The tissues are through distillation, not through condensation. So if you eat food, that food will get distilled and finer and finer and finer and you get to your tissues. And at some point, these three doshas meet the tissues, you know, at the level of ojas, let's say. Or just means energy. So, and in that point, they are together and you have life. So if you have tissues, and in the tissues you have the doshas, you have life. It's like if you have the soul in the matter, you have life. Anyway, these three doshas, these three substances, are somehow located. I mean, they are all over the body, but they have a predilection, a tendency to accumulate in some parts of the body. And the kapha, which means phlegm, is accumulated in the upper part, even head. So if you have a headache, this means your kapha is higher. Generally, there are some vata headaches, but anyway, the normal headache is too much phlegm in your head. So it's like paining. Then, of course, if you have a cough, bronchitis, you know, you have a lot of phlegm here. So these are the kapha part of diseases, the kapha diseases are here. Then pitta, which is digestion, bile, you can translate it by bile, is located here. So everything what is about the digestion, the stomach, the pancreas, the small intestine, that is pitta. So if you have ulcer, stomach ulcer, or if you have any type of burning in the stomach, or this is pitta type of disease. And vata is located in the big bowels, in the big intestine. Anyway, and any diseases which are like you have a lot of air, gas, let's say, in your intestine, this is a vata type. Vata is also circulated all over because it's very light, it's like air. And its characteristic is that it's mobile. You know, air, like wind, is mobile. So Vata is circulating all over the body through the body channels. So any type of neurological diseases, nerves, any type of headache, of pain, of, if your mobility is impaired, you are too much mobility, or you are like paralyzed. It's a Vata type of problem. So if the mobility in your body, even if your intestinal mobility means the movement of the bowels, it's impaired, and we say you have constipation, that is a Vata type of disease. Okay, anyway, these are the properties. How is the wind? The wind is cold, it's dry. So if you are too much in the wind, you will get really cold and dry. So this is the effect of the dosha on your tissues. Pitta, how is pitta? How is the bile? It's hot and moist. Yeah, it's like the gastric juice, let's say. It's used for digestion. And how is kapha? It's cold, it's heavy, you know, like phlegm. So these are the characteristics of these three. You cannot see these three. You will never see them, but you see the effects of them on our tissues. And then you can say, he has a lot of vata, he has a lot of pitta, he has a lot of kapha. And accordingly, you will treat this. So this is the body concept, actually, more or less. And then you have the tissues. By the tissues, I told you, they are through distillation. So by taking food, which is a gross thing, the food will get like distillated in plasma, and from plasma in blood, and from blood in muscle, from muscle in fat, from fat in bones, bones in marrow, and from marrow in the reproductive juices, let's say the reproduction for the woman and for the man, the spermatozoid and also the reproduction juices. And these are finer and finer and finer and finer. So any disease which is in this area coming, and it's coming generally through the food. In Ayurveda, disease is coming with food. You eat too much, you eat less, you eat not to the right time, you eat not in the right season, the right thing, you know. Generally, it's through food. But of course, it's not only food, it's also if you, by image, by visual, if you see too many things which are not appropriate. Let's say you spend all your days in front of the computer or in front of the TV. So it's too much information coming. Or you are just having 24 hours your eye closed, and this is no information. So any inappropriateness in stimuli, the food stimuli, the image, the sounds, if you live in the city and it's too much sound, this also will make you like ill or something. So anyway, food is the main thing between these stimuli. So that if the disease is coming in this part, it is curable. Because Ayurveda will have some medicines which will act on the muscle and will bring the disease back to the blood. And then we'll give some medicines for the blood, to purify the blood. We'll bring the disease back here in the stomach, where it came. And from the stomach, you will make some vomiting or some purgation through the normal openings of the body, and you will eliminate the disease out. I mean, the body itself will eliminate it. Sometimes we'll just puke because you're ill, and that is good. Ayurvedic doctor will never, if you are vomiting, say, I will give you an anti-vomiting thing. No. If you vomited, okay. If you have diarrhea, let it have it. But you take to you medicines so that after some time the body itself will know it's out, the disease is out, so it will stop. Okay, so far, because it was so much complicated, do you have any questions? This is how disease is coming to the body. By improper exposure to time. So if you have a dry season and if you eat dry things like chips in a dry season, you will get more drier. So you have a vata. If it's a moist season and you eat something moist, too much liquids or something, or too much like cheese or anything in a heavy season, in a moist season, then you will get more kapha, more phlegm diseases. This is the logic. Or, of course, if you expose yourself to tastes, like to the food, which is not appropriate, to sounds or to smells, anything which you come in contact with, this can make you ill. And also, if your activities, you overeat, you oversleep, you over, or everything that is over or too less, it's bad. So, but the main cause is food. So the therapy in Ayurveda, because the main cause is food, is diet. It's logical. You need a diet so that you stop doing what you did, so that you will stop doing the inappropriate thing, and also you will get some medicines to that in order to cure what you already have. But first you have to stop the cause going over and over. So you have always a diet during your therapy. So this is how I told you when the disease is coming and going deeper and deeper. So if the disease is coming here, it's already difficult to cure. It's really chronic disease, because it will be very difficult to bring it back, and to the stomach back and eliminate it. It takes years. And if the disease is coming in the marrow, like in the neurological system, and in the reproductive system, like sterility or any type of reproduction, it's uncurable, actually. It's so difficult to cure. You have in Ayurveda some specific part which is only addresses this one, reproduction. But it's very difficult. You have to do a lot of things in order to bring the disease back all over the way. Yeah? Okay, so this is the body concept. I will stop here if you have any questions. Otherwise, we'll start the video. Okay, we'll start. The therapy is coming in the video, so I won't do it anymore. Oh, it's this one.
However, man did ask himself and others this question: what is the solution? What is the answer to this degenerating situation? The answer centered around three activities that man should undertake. They are dinacharya or daily regimen, Brahmacharya or seasonal regimen, and Sadhvratam or ethical regimen. Dinacharya, for example, covers various cleansing activities beginning from wake up to going to sleep. Dinacharya. Sunrise is considered the most auspicious time calcium protects eyes, nose, throat against diseases and also improves their efficiency. Calcium also prevents diseases of the neck and head regions. It also strengthens voice. toxins in the body. One of the methods used in this is directing medicated steam on the body. Steam arising from water boiled with castor and tamarind leaves is directed on the patient's body, lying in a steam chamber. But care should be taken that steam is not directed above the neck. This is normally done after a pain. Mm-hmm.